Oh, we talk a lot about extraterrestrials on this program, don't we? Well, up next, Craig Campobasso joins us with his latest work called The Extraterrestrial Species Almanac. The subtitle tells it all, The Ultimate Guide to Grays, Reptilians, Hybrids, and Nordics. So we'll be talking with Craig. We'll take calls with him in our final hour here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Our special guest tonight now is Craig Campobasso, multiple award-winning filmmaker, Emmy-nominated casting director. Craig was 18 years old when he went behind the scenes on Frank Herbert's Dune, directed by David Lynch. Remember that one? Craig received an Emmy nomination for outstanding casting for a series on David E. Kelly's Picket Fences. His casting career spans three decades. Craig directed, wrote, and produced the short film that we've talked about on the program, Stranger at the Pentagon, which was adapted from the popular UFO book authored by the late Dr. Frank E. Stranges. After production, the short film won the Best Sci-Fi Film at two prominent film festivals. Craig's latest work, he's got a number of books out there. The latest is called The Extraterrestrial Species Almanac. Craig, welcome to the program. I'm looking forward to this.
Happy New Year, George. I'm so happy to be with you. How are you?
I'm great, my friend. And what's going on in Hollywood? Production shut down for now?
It is shut down for now. During the whole COVID this past year, the productions I was working on, of course, were all COVID compliant. And we didn't have one incident of any breakout of COVID on the sets at all. Really what happens is some of our sets, we even had doctors or we have a COVID monitor where they go and they study how to run a set, make sure that people are social distancing, make sure that all the paperwork of COVID testing has been turned in. And they can also do on-the-spot checks with COVID testing on the set where they get the results within 20 minutes. So the shutdown, I know, has angered a lot of productions because there really hasn't been that many cases out there.
Right.
And I know everybody is hoping that they're going to allow production to go back up again soon.
You know, I'm in St. Louis until they start opening things up again, but Ancient Aliens, the taping is on hold. A lot of different shows are on hold right now.
Yes, and some shows that I've done that are interview-based, interestingly enough, we had to shoot them on Zoom, which is very hard to do when you're intercutting a show, so the producers and directors have found very interesting ways of doing that. Some we sort of put them in a different environment and have the host or somebody interacting with them. Oprah, when she did her interview with Obama, it looked like they were sitting across from each other, but through CGI,
that's
Obama
right.
was in one state, Oprah was in another, and it looked like they were looking at each other sitting right there. I mean, it was amazing. They actually showed how they did it.
You can even reach over and look like you're touching the person on the knee or something.
That's right. That's right.
That's,
you know,
amazing.
There was a time when I was doing a movie, and this was years ago, and the director showed me a set that was all green screen, and where there was a couch, they built a box, and where there was a table, they built a table. Everything was green. And then he said, now watch this. And he interlaid a three-dimensional set from the 15th century and then showed me how he shot actors already and incorporated them. And you would never know that it was a virtual set.
That's amazing. How did Craig Campobasso get interested in UFOs and extraterrestrials?
Well, I did when I was 26. I started my casting career on Steven Spielberg's Amazing Stories, which was an amazing feat in itself. And during that time, I had a major spiritual awakening and I just started looking into all things Universal, looking into master teachers, and started delving deep into the UFO community and learning from contactee cases, abduction cases, meeting lots of people in the industry. And over all these years, I'm 27 now, so you didn't laugh, George.
No, because I know how old you are.
Don't say it.
I'm protecting your image.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, let's talk about the new work, the Extraterrestrial Species Almanac, that I had the honor of writing a little snippet for you on the back of the book. And yes, it's truly remarkable. How did you do? Tell me about the research that you did with this.
Well, the research is all these years of meeting and talking to contactees. I have met, and I guess this won't sound strange to people on your show, but many hybrids who are from different various places around the universe. For instance, for one of the most enigmatic races are the mantis beings. There's not a lot of information on mantis beings. So I came in contact with a woman who is actually a mantis hybrid. So I was able to interview her to get into and delve deeper into who and what they are, what their agenda is, because a lot of times in abduction scenarios, they're sort of seen in the background and they're observing or protecting. And it's kind of sort of up in the air what they are, but I learned a lot from her, and then therefore was able to incorporate her information into it. Now, someone will probably say, now, how do you become a hybrid? Some of the hybrids I met, their fathers worked in military installations, and they had taken extraterrestrial DNA, sometimes from three different races, and incorporated it. And then they brought and that military officer would then use his own sperm. And then these children would be born, and then they would raise them and see how they interacted. Another way is when the embryo is in the womb, is that an extraterrestrial race can actually inject it with part of their own DNA.
Let's talk about these 82 species. How in the world did you come up with that number?
Well, I was listening to Paul Hellyer give a lecture.
Former Defense Minister of Canada.
Yes, exactly. And he's just amazing. And he was talking about 82 races that he knew of that were visiting Earth. There are way more than that, but I decided to do an homage to him and choose the 82 races because he's just been so amazing with all the information he's brought forth that's been suppressed.
Now, some of these 82 races... I mean, I know the grays, the reptilians, the hybrids, the Nordics that you've got on the cover of your book.
Right.
What are the others?
Well, there's some.
Not that you don't have to go through 82 different species here, but give me an idea.
Well, some interesting ones are the Jowlin. They're these little little creatures that are about 2 to 3 feet tall. They're sort of like doctors in a strange way. They sort of waddle a little bit. They really are primarily seen in with starseeds who are either going through a rough patch or if there is a physical ailment, sometimes they are seen assisting them. Or if their mind gets bombarded with so much cosmic information and downloads, it could be very trying a starseed that's just waking up. So they've been seen. There's also these creatures that are also smaller that are called bat bahuls, and I'd say that five times really fast. And they sort of do a little telepathic hypnosis on people like draconians and bat grays and et cetera, that sort of bends people to their will when they're being abducted to keep them subdued, et cetera.
As we get into this, Craig, we'll get into these different species in an interesting way, but there's some synchronicity to this book because you dedicate it to your biological father that you recently found. Tell me about this.
Well, this is such an amazing story because once I started working on this book, which was in 2019, I got a phone call from she told me she was a genealogist and I was her fourth or fifth cousin, and she wanted some information on my mother's father's side. That's how we were related. I told her, I said, look, I have a biological father. I don't know much about him. My mother didn't. It's a long story.
All right. So you did know that you had a different father.
I did from the age of 12 when my mother told me at age 12. So I tried to find him on the internet. I just had his first and last name. Never could find him. She found him for me right away. Actually it took about 6 months. And then... So she said he passed away in 2006 and he's buried at Forest Lawn. I went down there the next day, asked them if they had a name of a person that called when he passed. They did in their computer and they gave me that name. I came home, I looked it up, and this man lived right around the corner from me.
Oh my God.
Yes, a 74-year-old man. And I thought, well, maybe this could have been his best friend or something. So I wrote him a letter. His address was online. I put my picture in, told him a little bit about it. 2 days later, I got a call from his son who said, my dad got your letter. And I said, oh, was your dad friends with Fred? And he said, no, actually, it's his half-brother. And I went, oh, you're kidding. So you're my cousin. And he said, yes. So, by the way, the genealogist was able to find him through DNA, right? So I knew that I had the right person.
Now, did your father, let me ask you this first, Craig. Did your father know about you when you were a baby? Sometimes they don't know this.
Yes, he did know. When him and my mother were dating, after she became pregnant, she found out he was married with a kid.
Oh, geez. Okay.
So she was not happy about that, and so she ended the relationship. She said he did come to the door after I was born, and she said I just put the door in his face and told him not to come back.
So she didn't want any child support, nothing like that?
No, she did it all on her own. I mean, the first year it was me, her, living with her sister Joan and another roommate until she met my dad.
Well, go ahead.
No, and she met my dad. She had met my dad during that year. My stepfather, I call him my dad.
Well, the synchronicity of all this, and that's why you've dedicated this book to him, is you've got a picture of him in a military uniform. He was in the military, but there's something even more special about it. Tell us.
There is. So while I'm having my first dinner with my new Uncle John and cousin Chris, which was 3 hours, by the way, about an hour into the conversation, my uncle looked at me and he said, oh, so anyway, your father really wanted to be in the military. My mom had to sign a piece of paper for him to go into the Air Guard because he wasn't of age yet. When he was 18, he went into the Air Force. And, oh, and by the way, he worked on Project Blue Book.
Oh, it's right? It's genetic.
It's genetic, and I literally was floored, and I looked at my uncle, and I said, do you know what Project Blue Book is? And he goes, well, kind of. And anyway, I have since, he has three boys. I've talked to two of them, and they were very interested in UFOs and said throughout the years, they tried to get him to crack and talk about it, and he wouldn't crack.
Well, I bet he knew J. Allen Hynek, and ironically, you've got Jay's son, Paul, writing a snippet on the back of the book as well.
That's right. That's right. And, I mean, it's just fascinating. And what's even more fascinating, he was there during the time of Valiant 4. What if he was part of that case? Now, that would just tie everything together.
Exactly.
I mean, and I wouldn't doubt it. I don't know how I could prove that unless, some wonderful person in the government dug up some files and sent them to me.
Well, that could explain this driving urge you have behind you to uncover these ET and UFO stories.
Yes. And it even goes beyond that. He said when he left the military, he came back here, and he eventually became the head of construction at Warner Brothers. So he was in the film business for the whole other part of his life, the same as me. And he was there for many, many years. And he left and he opened up his own Phoenix shop. He did all the sets for the Hollywood Bowl. And then he created and designed and built the sets for concerts for Michael Jackson,
wow,
Elton John, Alice Cooper, Neil Diamond, etc. And I learned all of these different things through my uncle. Plus, I have a stepbrother and two stepsisters.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Who flew out to meet me, and we sort of broached the UFO subject, and I wasn't sure how they would think about it, but they were just totally into it and loved everything about it.
Might you have met your father and never even knew who he was?
Interestingly enough, in the same town that I live in, him and his wife lived here, and right around the corner from me, we have an antique mall, and they had a booth there, and I've always been there, and I bet there was a point where we were in the same place at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. You might have even been in his booth while he was there.
There, exactly. And mind you, I never knew what he looked like. My mom had a picture. She gave it to me when I was 12, and it got lost over the years. So my uncle was so great and gave me all the photographs and things that he had and gave me all the possessions that he had left.
Oh, that's remarkable. Where did you get the artwork and the photos for the Extraterrestrial Species Almanac?
Well, the artwork, there's close to, I think, 90 renderings. So I worked with a lot of artists, and that is painstakingly time-consuming.
I mean, there's one on almost every other page.
Yes. Yeah, there's actually an artist rendering for every species in the book, including we have four actual pictures of extraterrestrials, one of those being Valiant Thor, two of those being from the Clarion race, which is from the Maurizio Cavallo contactee case out of Italy. And actually what I couldn't put in the book is who they were. The male's name is Sewell, and the female's name is Nelfa. And Nelfa is studied in astrobiology and chronoastronomy dimensional, which basically means it relates to time in the universe between the dimensions. And Maurizio is also in contact with a guy who is a Venusian time operator, which also he shared a picture with me of, who is very unique looking. He's human. He has a very elongated head.
Oh, the pictures are fantastic. Craig, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk more. For those who want to know who Valiant Thor is, you've heard Craig mention him a couple times. He apparently came to this planet from Venus to share some things with us, and we kind of turned him down, or did we? We'll talk about that and more when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take your calls next hour with Craig Campobasso as we talk about his work, The Extraterrestrial Species Almanac. Wait till you hear us talk about the Greys, reptilians, and some of the hybrids, and the Nordics look just like us, as a matter of fact. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie back with you, Craig Campobasso with us. We're going to take phone calls with Craig next hour here on Coast to Coast. Craig, I'm going to throw out some ETs, and if you would describe them to us and tell us where you think they originate from, here we go. Let's start with the grays. Kind of give us a description.
Well, the grays are, they're just like humans. There are many different races of them, from small, medium, large, supersized. Primarily, they come from Orion, Zeta Reticuli. Some of them are interdimensional. Some of them are from the future. Some of them that are not malevolent are preferred to be called, like the Zetas, the good Zetas out of Zeta Reticuli, preferred to be called Zeta Humans. And so we have that classification in the book as well.
The cover is, what, a reptilian? What is that?
It's a serpent being, and the publisher actually came up. They have an artist, I guess, within their confines there, who did that. And I had no idea they were doing it. So when they sent me the book cover the first time, I was like, oh my God, wow, look at that. So, but I will tell you, it's definitely attention grabbing, and the consensus is of everybody that's seen it really likes it. So,
captivating eyes.
Yes. Very captivating.
I've noticed that. That's kind of intriguing.
Yeah, and it's a female.
I'd take her out for a drink, wouldn't you?
I forgot who told me. Somebody said, yeah, I think I... Oh, it was actually my publisher, the head guy. He said, yeah, I think I've dated a few.
That's funny. Now, how was that originated? Is this a species that you think exists, or was this the imagination of your artist?
No, well, in the actual book under serpent beings, there is the serpent being of the race that I was writing about, and they come from serpents, a constellation that's in the northern sky.
Now, the reptilians are different from the serpents?
Well, serpents are more of snake DNA, and in hybrid programs, they could be mixed with a little human. They could be mixed with a little reptilian. There's so many different things with hybrids. Basically, the most precious alloy in the universe is DNA, and once a race becomes schooled in genetics, they basically start building different races for whatever they, you know, if it's for a diabolical thing to include into their society, or sometimes if a benevolent race comes to Earth and they want to study us for 1,000 years, part of what they do is they start a hybrid program.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, they can understand us by being a part of us as well. So they look at it differently than we do. How they obtain the DNA, they would definitely go in and they would ask the soul if they could extract that DNA, and if the soul said no, then they wouldn't do it. But basically, there's so many different species with just different mixtures.
I've always thought the hybrid program could have also included trying to remove us from the planet and replace us with the hybrids.
Well, that seems to be the case at the moment.
Really?
If we go to like the Sasani being, for instance, which is you had Bashar on the show before, Daryl Anka,
right? Right.
Bashar. So they have they're in a parallel Earth, 300 years in the future, and at one point. in that version of Earth, they lost their way in that dimension and they sort of destroyed their planet, not physically destroyed, but pollution and all of that. So they sort of mutated into these gray-like creatures that could no longer reproduce and were dying out. So they sort of came to our timeline, extracted DNA. Over time, they became a benevolent race. So their first hybrids are called the Mazé. Their hybrid twos are called the Tall Gray Mazanis. Their hybrid three are the Sasani beings, which are half human, half gray. Their hybrid four species are called the Sheyao, and they're slightly more human-looking. And then in the hybrid fives, they become more human-like. And then they sort of become Earth humans all over again once they get into the hybrid seven of their program. And I think they're entering six. I talked to Daryl the other day to actually go over it all.
Are there many grays, like, scattered throughout the universe, many reptilians? Or does the species, is it confined to a certain planetary system?
Well, I think the bulk of it is in Beta Reticuli and the Orion.
For the grays.
For the grays, and some could be in Boötes as well.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course here, living underground.
Do you have a favorite species?
I do. I'm very kin to the Pleiadians, and I really love also the Clarion race because they just have such a wealth of information, and as well as the Pleiadians, but. Like the Clarions, for instance, they believe in creating light. They honor the one with no name, the invisible architect of creation.
Like God.
Yeah, exactly. So that's their version of it. And they believe that time and space are their temples, planets and stars, their cathedrals, and the universe, their sanctuary. I just think that's beautifully put the way they put it.
Are there many species that look like us, the Nordics?
Oh, there's so many. There are so many species that look like us, and that's why in the consciousness-raising programs, a lot of beings that are from all over the universe who are human are actually living and working in jobs on the planet. I have actually ran across a few in my day. It wasn't confirmed that they were, but when you look at them and they look at you, you know. You feel it, and it goes back to that feeling that Dr. Frank described when he first met Valiant Thor, who looked beyond his eyes deep into his soul, and he knew that he had read his soul history, and he knew that he was someone quite special. And it's the same sort of feeling when you see one of these beings here. I mean, all of us could be interacting with them on a daily basis.
I've always wondered if the various races on this planet are separate extraterrestrial species that all came here.
I actually believe that that's true. They do say that one race went and settled in Norway, and that race actually has, I believe, more teeth than we do, and that you can tell them apart. I'm not sure what their original race was called, and I didn't include them in the book, but I just found that that was fascinating, and of course, it's a Scandinavian country.
Not every race is benevolent. Which ones, in your opinion, Craig, should we watch out for?
Well, definitely the Draconians, the Bad Greys, the Bat Bulls, you know, as we know, draconians, there's so many different of the reptile species. Lots of them look different. Some are extremely tall and large and muscular and aggressive and overpowering. And they're tyrannical warriors. And as we have all sort of heard how the agenda of taking planets over from the inside and in secret, how they look at a planet like Earth as a resource, and that the humans are a resource, and that they keep us from becoming sovereign beings of the universe because we're dualistic and we are not yet fully conscious. So that's why all the benevolent races are here, and they have these consciousness raising programs, because once we reach a fully conscious state, they're not going to be able to stay here anymore, and they can't stay in that vibration. So this is sort of like their last fight. But the good news is this planet is going in the right direction. It will turn into light, and it will go into, we will join again with Universal Society, and we will start learning about other worlds, and there'll be exchange programs. Like, for instance, on Valiant Thor's craft, the crews on every saucer, they're called Victor-class saucers. They're 300 feet in diameter and hold a crew of 200. Every 3 months, the crew is shifted out. The main crew stays, and they go to a different craft, or they go to a mothership or to a starship. And while they're there, they're learning all different kinds of jobs, and that's how their society is created. And some then want to enter a commandership and start going through those programs as well. So I put a whole section in the back of the book, by the way, that explains all of the Galactarian alignment of space peoples and planets, craft, how they work, et cetera. Also, the cosmic laws and a terminology of the extraterrestrial world.
It seems, Greg, that the abductions of the 50s and 60s, where they were a little more prevalent than now, why is that? Why do we seem to have a shortness of abduction cases?
Well, I think in the 50s, for sure, it was all of the humans that were coming and making contact with guys and men and women here, especially George Van Tassel, we know Adamski, Dr. Frank. There was many from that era, and basically they all had the same message. And it was Thor's message, which was to preserve life, to eliminate sickness and poverty, and of course to talk to them about how the universe is run, to Eisenhower, and to talk to them especially about atomics. Atomics, for instance, not only affects this planet and knocks it a little bit off its axis, but it interferes interdimensionally and sends waves out into the universe. Dr. Frank said that Thor told him that during that first blast that they had to put 100 craft around the Earth just to stabilize it. So they were talking about very important things, and especially with George Van Tassel, Orthon gave him the blueprints to build the Integratron, which was a rejuvenation machine, which would keep us looking young like they look during their very long lifetime.
Amazing work, Craig. Just fantastic. Where do people get this new book?
They can get autographed copies by me by going to my website, autobiographyofunanet.com, and then click on other books, and it's right there.
All right, and we've got a link for you at coasttocoastam.com on your website. And
yeah.
But you're all over. You're on Facebook, Twitter. You've got it all, don't you?
Everything, yes. And thanks to all your listeners. The first time I was on the show, I got 12,000 Twitter followers in one night.
Excellent. Well, they love this field, and you do a great job doing it, to be sure.
Thank you.
What's new with the Frank Stranger at the Pentagon? Any updates on the movie?
Yeah, well, the good news is if people have Amazon Prime, they can watch the short film there for free, or they can watch it on StrangerAtThePentagon.com. I have the full movie. The feature-length film is set, and everything is ready to go. We are still talking to different investors, so if there's any investors out there who want to invest in a movie, please call me.
Did you do a GoFundMe at all?
No, because I would like to make this movie at a $30 million budget, because that's really what...
Whoa, you're talking big-time Hollywood.
We're talking big-time Hollywood, but I want to keep the integrity of it, so that's why I want to make it independent. And we have one of the biggest entertainment attorneys in town who will help with distribution. He will field and do all of the paperwork and negotiations with investors, and he will also be our production attorney. They've done over 500 to 600.
They know what they're doing. Craig, we're going to come back and take an hour of phone calls with you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.